You're listening to episode 29 of Fear the Boots interview series. In this interview, we talk with Mark Dino. Running time for this episode is 41 minutes. I don't want to jump too much off the outline here. Actually, it's not jumping off the outline here. You're on point 2C. I actually want to go on to point 2D here, which is the one that I've been really eager to get to here, which is cyberpunk. You know, the entire genre that Shadowrun is at least loosely based on. I mean, the introduction to magic certainly changes that somewhat. But really, the core in terms of the culture and the feel of Shadowrun is cyberpunk. And people aren't typically as familiar with cyberpunk as they are with fantasy or as they are with something like Star Trek. And so let's talk cyberpunk here for a minute, Mark, because you've got down here, and I'm reading off your outline here, which once again, I really appreciate. So part 2D, subpoint number one.
Jeez, this is a numbered list with letters. Yeah. And then subordinate clauses.
Yes, yep. Roman numerals.
You don't know how long Dan has been dreaming of this.
I love outlines.
If Dan wasn't married, he would probably be proposing to you right now.
Right. But you talk here about cyberpunk. And one of the things that we have observed with cyberpunk is cyberpunk seems to be a genre that in many ways was very tied to the decades of the 70s and 80s. Because of the fact that they were dealing with this looming dark cloud of a near future. People had the sense that they were sitting at the end of the industrial age and the start of the information age. Computers were going to become more ubiquitous. Technology was going to start invading our daily lives, our culture, even our biology. They had a sense that corporations were merging and rising in significance and power, and nobody really knew exactly where that was going to lead. But then what happens is once you hit about the point of the dot-com boom, give or take a few years, that future hits. Some of it didn't pan out. You, of course, had the big collapse of the Pacific Rim economies. Japan and whatnot, you know, went through a really major collapse and did not become the world dominating powers that cyberpunk had predicted them to be. But in other cases, it did play out, though maybe not quite the way it was expected. While none of us are cyborgs, we do all have smartphones.
I'm a cyborg.
We have smartphones that in many ways do more than the pocket secretaries of Shadowrun 1st and 2nd edition ever imagined. Mm-hmm. The corporations have gotten bigger and more powerful. I don't want to get political here, but government certainly has grown in scope and it's an intrusiveness in a variety of ways. And
what was a fear became a reality that we just got used to.
Yeah, it became a reality we got used to. And so cyberpunk, in a sense, became a little bit irrelevant. I don't know if that's quite the word I'm looking for, but that at least maybe puts you kind of in the ballpark of what I'm getting at. And so you kind of have some notes here on this. And rather than stealing your thunder by reading your outline, as much fun as I'm having doing that, I want you to talk to that. What are you doing with that feel of cyberpunk to make that relevant, not to a 1985 or even 1995 audience, but to make that relevant to a 2013 audience?
Yes, and this was a point of much discussion that I was heavily involved in. You're right that I think at least the classic cyberpunk world of Gibson and Snow Crash and the early Shadowrun doesn't really resonate with people anymore. It doesn't have that feel. So what we discussed, and I mentioned earlier that part of the people in this pool of freelancers making Shadowrun 5, we had some very passionate classic cyberpunk people. And in discussing with those people, you know, once steering them initially away from the, well, we got to have to go back to just completely wired matrix and everything. Okay, no, we can't quite go there. But
explaining what happened to 802.11 would be a somewhat difficult jump to make.
Yeah. But what I distilled it down to is, what's the core? Like, if you imagine back to, if you were around in the early 90s and you read about the cyberpunk and the Shadowrun world, it elicited a feeling, almost an emotional reaction. I think in the freelancer discussions, I even used the incredibly technical phrase, the heebie-jeebies, right? It gave you that kind of chill in your spine feel. We're not going to fix it by just rolling everything back to that. But if we can make that feel our target, then if we can take that feel, what can we do now, according to the kind of our relevant or a modern understanding, to replicate that feel of the Shadowrun world, that dark future where these punks, quote unquote, the rebels are the heroes, granted dark anti-heroes, if that's not too cliched, but still there. How can we replicate that feel with the core themes that we think are present in cyberpunk that make up its core, this distrust of authority, these large soulless organizations that control your lives? How can we make technology a little bit scary again, which is
right.
difficult, and make this dystopian world? And the original Shadowrun had some advantages, that technology still was scary. This idea of that technology would be so closely tied to your body was scary. It's not really that anymore. You know, nowadays you walk and you grab some random kid off the street and you tell him you're going to give him a cyber arm, and he may say, cool, right? But what can we do to bring back some of that scary theme? And what I thought was still relevant today is to more replicate the dark economic or social future, right? With all of this talk about privacy laws and freedom of information and things like that, where the dark cyberpunk future, I think, really lies in how much control these organizations have. And you hear doom and gloom predictions about the death of the middle class is always the phrase, right? Where I see kind of modern Shadowrun going is that idea of the death of the middle class, except take that and ramp it up to 11, right? So what you have in the Shadowrun world is a massive dichotomy between the people that are in the system and the people that are out of the system. But even the people within the system, they don't even realize how trapped they are, right? The Shadowrun world has destabilized such that it's very, very scary, and there's so many threats to an individual that you need a great deal of protection in order to get the measures of comfort that we enjoy in our modern society, or contemporary society, I should say. But in order to achieve that, you essentially have to sell your life to a corporation in order to get the corporate protection and the corporate comforts. And you may not even realize how much you're giving up at that time. I imagine a theoretical scenario, which is far within the realm of possibility, that, say, for instance, you sign up for a job in a corporation and they give you corporate housing, right, at a very competitive rate, and you can raise your family here, no problem. But then, say, later on, 10 years down the line, you get a better job offer in a different company, and you say, I want to leave my job. And the company says, no problem. Here are the terms of that you signed, that's the termination of your contract, whereas now, for instance, you may have to repay your living expenses at a much higher rate that you've incurred over the entire 10 years that you're working in the corporation. And, oh, by the way, here's all the deferred interest that you incurred during that time. You have to repay that before you can leave. Would you still like to leave your job? That's the reason why people get extracted in Shadowrun, because in many cases, this is the only way that you can actually leave with anything. This idea that the corporations control everything overtly, and more to the point, covertly, they control what you see and what you experience. And for the Shadowrunners on the outside, they are the people that have woken up and said, wait a minute, this is the system. It's controlling us, don't you see? And whereas the punk now in, I think, contemporary Shadowrun, the contemporary cyberpunk, is not the more overt rebellion of like the pink mohawks and the ledges and the chains, but the real essence of it is kind of giving the system the metaphorical or the virtual finger that's saying, I'm not going to be a part of you. I'm not going to let you control me. I'm going to make my own choices, even if they are
right,
to live in this awful set of circumstances.
Well, of course, the ultimate irony then of Shadowrun is the fact that the people who give the middle finger to the system themselves ultimately become useful to the system, because of the fact that in order for these corporations to operate, they need people outside of the system to do things that they can't officially be associated with doing, mm-hmm. which to me was always one of the storytelling ironies. But, you know, I think that you guys have done a great job then in approaching that, because one of the things that was really a central theme of cyberpunk in the 70s and 80s was the idea that people would give up a certain amount of rights and privacy in order to attain some kind of a lifestyle, or maybe that technology made intrusion so easy that it became very commonplace. And at the time, that was very frightening to people because it was a very foreign concept. What you saw was the future that people feared was something like Thoreau described, of people living lives of quiet desperation, where they're just caught up in a system, they're a number, not a name, and that's their existence. And what happened is, of course, that future occurred. We have now reached that point where in so many ways we are depersonalized, we are observed, we are monitored, we are tracked. I mean, you go onto a site like Radaris, which I'll link in the show notes if anyone wants to scare themselves, just enter your name and look at how much the internet knows about you without even attempting to collate that information. I mean, it's some kind of frightening stuff. If you look at what really captures the public imagination right now, it's not the quiet desperation of living in a system. It's apocalypse. It's total catastrophe. You know, the things that people are starting to fear right now, you can see in the popularity of the zombie apocalypse, the alien invasion. There's a revived interest, you know, that kind of faded for a couple decades in nuclear holocaust and things like that.
Asteroids are the new big one after the Siberia thing. I see a news story every single day on Google News about asteroid detection.
I think, however, if you can take that basic equation of saying, sitting here in 2013, even if it's still objectionable, it has certainly become acceptable to give up a certain degree of rights and freedoms and up the ante to say, okay, maybe in 2013, we've already accepted things that in 1983 would have been unthinkable. However, we can up the ante a level further and say they want even more than what we have given today. And once again, you can kind of rekindle that sense of horror, that sense of rejection that is going to coil up in most people and say, no, there is no way I'm going to be part of that kind of a system. I would sooner live in the slums. I'd sooner live in the barrens and eat my pseudo soy chicken byproduct and live every day with the gangers than have to sacrifice what it means to secure a lower middle class lifestyle.
Yeah, I look at a book like 1984 and I still find that world terrifying. And I love that book. I love that setting. I certainly wouldn't want to live in it.
Well, then maybe Shadowrun should be more like 1984 so it can scare you, Wayne. I think it is in a certain way.
It sounds like it is.
Instead of the fear of the state owning you, it's the fear of the company store owning you. And that's still very powerful. And I think it's going to get more powerful as time goes on.
I want to talk about The Matrix. I'm taking a little off script here. I was skipping ahead a few points.
That's okay. It transitions well.
But
I can still say, as a person who's never actually played Shadowrun, in a previous episode, Julie was telling a story about her character in The Matrix, and I didn't know she was talking about Shadowrun.
You pictured falling ASCII characters.
When I hear Matrix, the first thing I think is
The Matrix.
Falling
is The
Matrix backwards, yeah. Hiragana.
Yeah. It so was in Shadowrun first!
Yeah, but okay. I had never heard of Shadowrun until long after I'd seen The Matrix movie.
Starcraft is such a knockoff of 40K. Wait a minute. 40K is such a knockoff of Starcraft. Yeah. That's it.
You did have your good Louis Armstrong impression, which I still want a history of that, of how the raving fanboy became Louis Armstrong. But anyway, two things that have always kind of struck me about The Matrix. And first off, for anyone who's not familiar with The Matrix, in Shadowrun, there is the idea that there is a virtual reality, that what you can do is you basically take the internet, you take these networks, and you can plug your brain into them. And you start processing that data on a sensory level. So when you encounter a file, instead of you just seeing a file in a file system, you encounter it as what appears to be a physical object in this effectively a hallucinated world. And as you're going through different systems and up and down different connections, they might look like rooms and hallways. And you have these kind of projected realities of what you look like or what you want to look like. There have always been really two kind of issues that I have seen with The Matrix in every edition of Shadowrun. And you have this here as a whole segment of the things that you guys are working on. I'm curious what you can tell us of where this is going. But issue number one is the fact that going into The Matrix, because of the fact that the game makers wanted to make it complex enough to be interesting, to be compelling, which is great, except for the fact that you have one decker in the party. And so while that person is decking, everyone else is on a 4-hour break because it has nothing to do with them.
And it's a whole other story in itself.
Yeah, it's a whole other story. It's a whole other set of rules. But then the second issue is the fact that in many ways, technology is moving faster than the description of The Matrix is. You know, as you mentioned earlier in the show, The Matrix was originally wired. You had to go to a cyber cafe or break into a corporation and physically plug yourself in. You know, you literally had to, I think it was a jack in or deck in, you know, were the terms. You had to plug yourself into their network. Well, then, of course, we reached this age of wireless communication, of Bluetooth, of 802.11. And all of a sudden, that seems kind of senseless. You look at kind of the distributed nature of the internet. There are very few isolated networks or truly isolated networks left. You know, you could hack almost any network from a home computer if you have the tools and the know-how and the, shall we say, lack of moral fortitude to do so.
Well, we talked about you could just sit in a van outside the corporation now and hack into
You don't even need to do it. You go to a local library.
Yeah, and sit at home. From 6 blocks away.
Yeah, you can hack a bank from sitting at home. I mean, you don't have to go anywhere. And so I'm curious to hear what you guys are doing with the Matrix, both in terms of rules and in terms of its technology, to make it a functional part of the game where it's interesting, it's plausible, but it's also not detracting from the group dynamic.
You touched on many of the priorities that we discussed. So the Matrix has been redesigned again for this edition. It seems to be the hallmark of Shadowrun that every edition carries with it an entirely new Matrix system, practically. But a big emphasis was to simplify and clarify the Matrix. The Matrix of Shadowrun 4 was open and free in what you could do, but many people that did not have a background in technology and how computers work felt lost because there wasn't a lot of direction in, okay, what do I need to do X? What steps, what tests do I need to make? So we're making things a lot more clear in Shadowrun 5. Now, as far as plausibility goes, we're kind of taking a mulligan on that one. As far as the fact that we were saying the Shadowrun Matrix is something that is completely unlike any technological system we have here today, you're going to have to break some suspension disbelief of your knowledge of modern computers and just accept that this is the Matrix. It is entirely different, and this is how it works. But one of the key things, and kind of tying this back into our discussion about the feel of cyberpunk and this control, one of the big changes that is already coming through in, or has come through in source books and in fiction writing and blog posts that you've seen, is that the corporations are taking back the Matrix. In examining the Matrix as it sat right now, and especially in conjunction with how we want to depict the Shadowrun world, it did not make sense that extremely powerful megacorporations that can influence governments would allow kind of this free open protocol exchange of ideas kind of a network. Just does not jive. So what you're going to see in Shadowrun is what we feel is more cyberpunky, which is it is going to be a proprietary Matrix. There is going to be free access, a public grid, but it's garbage. It's only for the people that can't afford anything else. If you want to get where the good stuff is, you're going to need to get into one of the mega corporations' proprietary grids, the Renraku grid, the Seder Krupp grid. That's where the good stuff is as a Shadowrunner. But what this means is the mega corporations now hold all the cards. They are the house at the casino, and the house always wins eventually. So what we're doing with hacking in SR5 is bringing it more in line from a feel perspective with how the rest of the game feels. You know, as a runner physically intruding in somewhere, that you can't just bust in the door, start shooting, and, you know, squat in some corporate office and hold off the authorities forever. Eventually, they are going to bring more force against you than you can handle, and you will lose. You can't stand and fight and win. If you want to do something, if you want to hurt the corporations, you're going to need to get in, do it quickly, and get out. Same thing is going to apply for the Matrix and SR5. Because they own the grid, they own the protocols and the communication, eventually they are going to find you and they are going to crush you virtually. But you can win if you are fast and agile and know exactly what you need to do, get in and get out with a minimal amount of noise. That's how you're going to succeed as a decker in Shadowrun 5th edition. We are bringing back the term from earlier editions because we think it was one of the most unique and iconic things. And as I said, we're emphasizing that the Matrix is something different. It's not the computer network of contemporary today. And a way that we are emphasizing that is we're bringing back the term decker and cyber deck because it's a term unique to Shadowrun, or at least fairly unique to Shadowrun, and will help emphasize that this is something different than your standard network.
So how are you dealing with Dan's other point of, well, the decker's doing his job, everyone else is kind of sitting there?
By making it so that the decker can continue to do his job while staying with the party. So for instance, the wireless Matrix is staying. We're not going back to wired. It was a necessary step to modernize the game, as well as from a game standpoint, to bring the decker with the party again. Secondly, if you're not totally familiar with Shadowrun 4th edition, you may have missed the introduction of AR, or augmented reality, which is a way to access and interact with the Matrix while still staying physically aware of your surroundings. The matrix appears as an image overlay in your physical vision as long as you have a way of rendering that.
So it becomes in many ways almost like the astral plane.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. For anyone who's not familiar with Shadowrun, if you are playing a magician or a shaman, you can go into an astral sense where you can perceive an astral plane. And what the astral plane is basically you perceive a spiritual reality that overlays the physical reality. And things that have life force or spiritual essence to them appear very brightly, whereas things that don't appear very dimly. So, for example, a human being, especially one who's not cybernetically enhanced, would glow pretty brightly. A spirit that might otherwise be invisible would now have a visible, seemingly tangible presence, whereas something like a wall or a rock would appear very darkly, if at all. If you pick up something like a book, you might be aware of the book, but you certainly wouldn't be able to read its pages because the ink on the pages would have no more life essence or spiritual energy to it than the rest of the pages would. And so it sounds like with this augmented reality thing that you do something similar, where walking the halls of the corporation in a sense becomes a metaphor for hacking. If I'm following this, and correct me if I'm wrong, but so while the street samurai and the gangbanger are shooting at the guards, you can be hacking something, and in a sense, it's kind of part of one encounter. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay.
In augmented reality, you take matrix actions at your, what we call your meat initiative, right? So you can wire up your Decker and keep him in augmented reality, but there's nothing quite so good as still going full virtual reality. If you really need to hack on the fly, if you really need your skills at their best, you're going to need to go full virtual still.
Well, and it makes sense with the feel you described trying to get of the Decker having to get in and out quickly. That way you don't actually go full virtual until you're at that point where you need to do it. It sounds like it would be safer to be an augmented.
Now, are you guys discouraging the creativeness behind it? For instance, when you go into the Matrix in fourth edition, you get to describe this whole new world. Are you trying to say that because the corporations own it, they dictate what people see once they're in the Matrix?
No, we're not discouraging the creativity of it. Not at all. The corporations, though they own it, will still sculpt interesting iconography. And I'm fairly certain there will still be rules. I just can't recall offhand if they're still there. There was a program in Shadowrun 4th edition called a reality filter, which meant that the hacker could define their own matrix metaphor and then conform the matrix to that. I'm fairly certain there's at least something similar to that. So definitely this idea that there's a virtual world that has its own metaphor, sculpting, iconography, that the GM can get creative in describing is still definitely 100% there. What I was talking about as far as the corporations controlling it more comes from a freedom of information and security being embedded into the very fabric of it.
Standpoint. I see. So you like go outside the bounds and you might get hurt kind of thing.
What you will get out of Shadowrun 5's hacking, it is going to be a race against the clock. No changes you make will ever be completely permanent. Eventually, the corporation and its grid overwatch division, God, will find it.
That was a subtle acronym.
Will find it and undo everything that you have done because they own it. They can put it back. But if you are quick and you are smart, you can get in, make the changes, the temporary changes that you need to make, extract information that you need or modify the working of devices and security systems so your team can get through and get out before they find you. Because although they are large and powerful, any large, powerful, or many large, powerful organizations are ponderous to bring to bear. And that's the case with the Matrix and the bad guys, the corporations in Shadowrun 5. So we're bringing back the Decker, we're bringing back the Cyberdeck to emphasize this. The Comlinks, which is the device you use to access the Matrix in Shadowrun 4, they're going to remain, but the Comlinks are now the legal devices. That's what kind of your mundanes, your normal people use for doing legal everyday things in the Matrix. But because the corporations own the protocols, those devices are now physically unable to hack things. They just can't do it because they are from a hardware level up. They're designed to not allow you to do that. What a Cyberdeck is now is, in many cases, a completely custom scratch-built piece of electronics that the Decker carries around. That's why it's so precious to them now. And the price is going up dramatically to reflect how precious these things are. They are highly illegal because their very existence is anathema to what the corporations want, which is to control the Matrix. But the hacker culture being what it is, they found ways around it, albeit temporarily. And so that's what you're doing now as a Decker.
Let's talk a little bit about this at the organizational level. How many people are involved in developing this product? And I guess we'll kind of break them down into two tiers of how many people are on the core team versus how many people do you have that are maybe peripherally involved as freelancers, or they're doing minor contributions, but really aren't in that core group that's having the big discussions and making the hard calls.
There's a small group of people that are the Catalyst staff.
Right.
So they're actually the full or part-time paid people. And then there are about 20 freelancers that are contributing in various forms. As addressing how active they are, that's really up to the individual. But right. Obviously, there are people that are specifically assigned to write various chapters of the rule book, and obviously they're active because they're writing the chapter. And then the other people contribute, comment, and give feedback as they have time and inclination to do so.
Now, still speaking from the organizational level here, so you got 20 people contributing to this. If you look at, once again, small house game production, you're probably talking 1, 2, 3, a really small number of people, certainly a number of people you count on the digits of one hand. What do you do when those 20 people hit some kind of an impasse? Is there somebody at the Catalyst staff who kind of comes in and casts a tie-breaking vote? Do you guys make consensus among yourselves? Is it just a typical human sociology thing where natural alphas start to emerge who, even if not appointed, are by default making the calls?
Jason Hardy is the Shatter Online developer. Uh-huh. He's the guy responsible at the end of the day. So he lets us work out our points and sees if a general consensus starts to form. Mm-hmm. But in the end, if we reach an impasse, Jason comes in and says, this is the way it's got to be. And we all have to listen because in the end, he's our boss and we move on.
At the end of these shows, there's a segment that we typically do to let people that we're interviewing talk about the things they've got coming up that they want to draw the attention of our listeners to. But in your case, I think there's a little bit more information here than what we usually deal with, because usually some of them say, oh yeah, there's kind of this book coming up, or maybe I've got, you know, this thing under wraps. It's all NDA and I can't talk about it. But actually, in the notes that you sent me, you've got a bunch of stuff here to go through. So let's hit all these one at a time. What's coming up? First of all, a Shadowrun 5 introductory box set. Can you talk about that?
Ooh. Yeah, that's been announced already, and uh-huh. I am having the pleasure of working on that. What I'm doing is compiling and editing down the rules of Shadowrun 5 to squeeze them into an introductory box set. So there's going to be...
So what's in a Shadowrun box set? I mean, something like Battletech, it makes sense, you know, because you have the minis and the maps and then the rule book. What do you put in a box set for Shadowrun?
I don't think I can announce any of the exact specifics.
Okay, no, that's fine. That's fair.
They will be in the general category of gaming aids. I can probably say that okay. much.
So I'll just make up my own answers here. It's going to be 2 rule booklets, a pamphlet on Seattle,
and GM screen,
and then half a dozen condoms.
Can you share? You mentioned you're compressing the rules to a smaller version. Can you share about how big that version will be?
Significantly smaller.
Just give us a number. You don't have to give us a unit of measure. You say like I am 9. You don't tell us 9 what?
Yeah. I am thinking about how much it would be. I'm not entirely sure because we're still going through the editing process. But
okay. I was just wondering if it was like a book or if it was a pamphlet, or like I'm comparing it to, say, Pathfinder's Beginner Box, which I thought was a great introductory product.
I did too.
I haven't seen that particular product, but I think they're aiming for something that will not require a heavy duty cover. So it might be something that's just, you know, a bunch of pages stapled together kind of a thing. So it's not going to be significantly large. The target is to make it accessible for the new players.
So your next couple of points here, I'm going to kind of lump together in that you say that there's several projects here that are getting put all together under kind of the unified portal Shadowrun.com. But in addition to Shadowrun 5, you've got Shadowrun Returns, which was a video game Kickstarter that I, well, I did not back some because I just kept forgetting to do it and that it ended, but it was a neat looking game that looked like they were trying to take Shadowrun back to its RPG roots, as opposed to the game that came out some years back, which
was Shadowrun in name only.
Bingo, Shadowrun in name only. It was a really kind of silly little shooter, but it really seemed to harken back to the days of like the old Sega game, you know, the old Shadowrun game that was around back then. And it was really treating the game more true to its RPG roots, and that I'm familiar with. But then you go on to mention Shadowrun Online. I'm going to admit some ignorance here. I wasn't aware they were making a Shadowrun Online.
Yep.
Based on the name, I'm going to presuppose this is an MMO?
Yes.
Okay.
An MMORPG.
Can you tell me anything about this? Has the Kickstarter started yet? Has this
the Kickstarter is done. They were funded. It's
done.
Yep.
Okay.
They got backed pretty easily, if I recall.
Okay. I missed that one. Shadowrun Returns, I was well aware of. Shadowrun Online, somehow that one completely just missed my radar somehow. With Shadowrun Online, what are we looking at here in terms of release date? Do they have a projection for when that's going to come out?
Unfortunately, I have no additional information for you. Cliffhanger Productions are the guys.
Cliffhanger Productions with a cliffhanger release date. okay. I'll be curious
You can direct people to the Shadowrun.com website, and then there's a link to Shadowrun Online and they can start checking out the blog entries if they're interested. Interesting little facts. The Shadowrun Returns video game by the company Harebrained Schemes was actually started by Jordan Weissman. If you know your Shadowrun history, he was actually one of the creators of the original Shadowrun universe. He had a very interesting blog post with a diagram.
I saw
showing the map that described the curious aspect of having to license your own intellectual property back to yourself from somebody else.
Yeah, I saw that map. Looking at that diagram was also looking at like a Rube Goldberg machine of the number of companies that passed through, leaving his hands to get back to his hands.
It's interesting how often that's happening right now. With the advent of things like Kickstarter, you're seeing a lot of original creators of things that were out in the 80s and 90s having to relicense their own product.
Even if they're not having to relicense them, just simply having to try to refund them and resurrect them. You know, you have that going off Wasteland 2, Elite Dangerous.
Leisure Suit Larry.
Thank you, Wayne.
I proudly backed Leisure Suit Larry.
I know, yes, I know you did.
I also saw that Mike Mulvihill is also working at Harebrained Schemes. He was another
names
of Shadowrun.
I never worked with him directly back in the day, but yeah, certainly I remember the name from skimming through the credits of the various books. He popped up quite a bit.
I'm fairly certain that this is unprecedented, but the fact that Jordan Weissman is making the Shadowrun Returns video game and the guys from Cliffhanger are also big Shadowrun RPG fans. The heads of all three companies, Catalyst, Harebrain, and Cliffhanger, are all talking to each other and tying their various products together at a high level. Now, granted, Shadowrun Returns is rolling all the way back to the beginning in 2050, but they did have discussions with us as the RPG licensing team to make sure what they replicate in the video game is consistent with what we're saying about it. Because a little while ago, Catalyst released the Shadowrun 2050 book, which was a source book for running Shadowrun 4th edition rules in the 2050 setting. And then, of course, the Shadowrun Online guys are setting it in quote-unquote contemporary or modern day, the 2070s of Shadowrun. And so they have also been talking with, I know they've talked with Jason Hardy about tying the meta plot of the video game. So essentially the events in the video game are going to be canon in the role-playing game universe as well.
Awesome. Is there anything else that you want people to be aware of or looking for in the near future here?
We're already starting to work on the ongoing meta plot of Shadowrun 5th edition. I can't give any specifics on the meta plot, but just that I'm excited about it. In my opinion, it is very cyberpunk-y. It's very much in keeping with some of the themes that I've been describing before. I will drop a vague hint that if you have your late Shadowrun 4th edition source books and you haven't picked up that there is something going on, go back to them, because we have been dropping hints in them for a while. Go back to them and especially look at the Shadow Poster comments and see if you can pick up that something's going on. So if you haven't already picked it up, Stormfront was just released, and Stormfront is the end of the 4th edition giant plot Kabam, where basically almost all of the ongoing metaplot threads for fourth edition are being tied up in Stormfront. But also in Stormfront is the kickoff for the first big metaplot for SR5. So if you're a big fan of Shadowrun metaplot, there's lots to go on there. Maybe I'll just throw in one more quick plug there for anyone. If you're not familiar with Shadowrun, one of the things I think is the most exciting about it is that our source books are written in character. Right. So when you're reading a Shadowrun source book, theoretically, you are someone, a Shadowrunner in the universe, logging on to the Shadowrun resource website of Jackpoint and reading articles about Shadowrunning. So when you pick up a Shadowrun source book, it's written in character from the perspective of a particular person and what they know about a particular topic that they're writing about. So there'll be a primary voice, and then you see the shadow posters or commenters will add in things that they know. And I am fairly certain that this is fairly unique to Shadowrun and makes our source books, I think, one of the most interesting reads, because essentially every source book is fiction and is metaplot information. And we build plots and put plot hooks in our source books, even if they're not ostensibly about the plot or in-universe events, even if it's a book just about, you know, whatever, cyberware or whatever, because it's being written from an in-character perspective, we have the ability to do that. So if you haven't looked at Shadowrun yet, give it a try. It's different in many ways, and I think you'll enjoy it.
Is Universal Brotherhood still around?
No, that plot is wrapped up.
Oh.
But bug spirits?
Yeah.
Gone away. They're out there.
I'm not a big fan of modules, but the Universal Brotherhood module I thought was really compelling. I don't know that every aspect of it was perfect, but I thought overall it was a really compelling.
Classic. Yep.
Yeah, it was a classic. It was good stuff. Really good stuff, especially if your players did not know all the gives of it. By this point, I think most people know all the gives of it, but if they didn't at the time, I thought it was a pretty deeply disturbing plot line.
I didn't get the opportunity to talk about all of the exciting new mechanics about Shadowrun 5th edition, but if you're interested, go to Shadowrun.com and find the link for the Shadowrun tabletop blog, and you'll see some posts there that describe a little more about the mechanics of Shadowrun 5 and give you a little bit of window on what's going on there.
Well, Mark, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to join us and talk about this. And for all of those of you at home, I hope that if you're interested in Shadowrun, that this has been useful. If you're not interested in Shadowrun, then I hope maybe you'll check some of the stuff out at Shadowrun.com. And even failing all of that, then at least maybe this kind of gives you a sense of what game development looks like in terms of a larger property than many of the people that we normally talk to. Especially, you know, I mean, some things were under NDA and couldn't be talked about, but this is more than we usually get, at least during the interview. I mean, sometimes I get a little more before or after the interview, but at least in the course of what was said during the interview, this is more than what people are usually able to tell us. But Mark, I really do want to thank you for taking the time out of your schedule to talk with us and talk with our listeners. And, you know, I look forward to seeing how Shadowrun 5th edition develops, because Shadowrun is one of those things that I have been a fan of, and unfortunately, because of some reticence with some of my gaming group, I kind of fell away from. But now, as my gaming group has been evolving, I think Shadowrun is becoming an option. Hey, once again.
We've hit this topic.
I know.
If you have a cyberpunk game, don't put elves on the cover. People won't know it's about cyberpunk.
Well, we're evolving John slowly.
Yeah.
Bringing him to the dark side.
You'll convert John, and eventually we'll just outvote Chad. And then we'll be back playing Shadowrun.
I'm Malachi on your forums, so.
Malachi, okay.
Yeah, if there's a thread for this particular episode, then
there will be.
Watch that, and if people have some further questions that I can answer,
yes,
I'll do my best to do so.
Yeah, and that is something that I want to emphasize. For those of you that are real Shadowrun fans, there were some things in the outline that we didn't have an opportunity to hit on about some of the detailed mechanics that they're looking at tinkering with for Shadowrun 5 that, at least as far as I could tell, do not appear to be under a non-disclosure agreement. So if you've got any questions, then get onto our forums and get into the thread for discussing this particular episode, because you'll have a chance there to ask some questions and possibly get some answers. You know, like I said, it's while some things are restricted, this is a lot more than we usually get. So take advantage of that. You know, get in there and see what they've got to say and find out what's coming up in Shadowrun 5th Edition. I'm certainly interested in picking it up and then trying to wrangle some people into playing it, because
I'd play.
I've been jonesing for it. It's been years since I've been able to get a local group here consistently playing it. But anyway.
Oh, my apologies. Can I stuff one more thing?
By all means.
If you live in the Regina, Algonquin, Manitou Council area, there's a local convention there called FragCon running up in May, and I will be running a Shadowrun session at that convention. So if you're interested in coming to play Shadowrun with me, you can come there. Also, I left a little surprise Easter egg also in the same city. If you head to Comic Readers downtown, I signed two copies of Corporate Intrigue, which I also did writing for. So if you run down there and grab them, you can get a free signed book.
As always, check the show notes. We're going to link to a bunch of stuff out there, including the charities that Derek is going to be running for Fear the Con, which also, once again, are open for people that are interested in donating to them for rehabilitating military animals or animals for those that have been in the military that need service animals. And we will put a link, not that this is hard to remember, but we will nonetheless put a link to Shadowrun.com. So thank you guys for tuning in. Have a great week and great games, and we will catch you next time.
See ya.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2013. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.